You are listening to From Sobriety to Recovery with Jesse Mogul. Let's get to the show. Welcome back to From Sobriety to Recovery. I am your host, Jesse Mogul. I am in addiction recovery. And do we have a great show for you today? This is going to be one of those where I'm going to hope to pump you up. I hope to pump you up because I'm in the middle of the last week of what I've considered to be my stretch run of just insanity that started sometime in the middle to beginning stages of March. It's been so long now. And I remember I've been talking about this for a while. Just get to April 20th. Just get to April 20th. Not lost on me that it's 420, which used to be a really important day. And I know I said this on a show recently, but 420 is like the international day to get high. And I certainly used to act like a fool on this day. And this time, I will be leaving Asheville, North Carolina. My best friend from college is Ball State. I know I went to many colleges, keeping up with them all. But this was the first one. We were fraternity brothers together, been best friends ever since. And it's been quite a journey for both of our lives. And now he's turning 50 on Thursday. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to celebrate that with him. And I'm very much looking forward to this opportunity to go on a trip with my girlfriend because she was unable to go to Broken Bow, Oklahoma. And so we're going to go out to Asheville and we're going to enjoy that. I've never actually been to the downtown portion of this city, so I'm really looking forward to what this experience will be like. And in this process of preparing myself for this event and just knowing that it was coming up and that there was going to be an opportunity for me to enjoy it and others, I've really been thinking about how it was I was going to experience this, because there will be the drinking and there will be the fun, and Asheville is known for the breweries. But overall, because of the length of time I have in sobriety and recovery, it's going to be quite easy for me to just integrate myself into late nights of watching people have a lot of fun on various degrees of alcohol and marijuana, because I'm sure that'll be there as well. And just being able to enjoy it for the moment that it is of all these people coming together to celebrate my friend's life. And then it gets me thinking about all the different varying stages of sobriety and recovery, because there are so many different stages of it. And I know we've talked about the five stages of change. Pre-contemplation, where you think nothing's wrong. Contemplation, where you realize something might be a little awry. Planning, where you definitely are thinking, this shit's got to change. Action taking, where it's like, okie dokie, we're no longer going to drink. We're going to step into this world of sobriety. What are we going to do with it? And then it's either maintenance or lapse. And we're constantly in a state of maintenance if we're doing it in a way that will benefit us long term. Everything I believe lives underneath the umbrella of sobriety and recovery for me. That while I may not be sitting here like, just be sober, just be sober, just be sober, just be sober, like I may have been on day 32, 7.5 years ago, there's still that part of me that can get triggered and that can all of a sudden feel warm, feel fight or flight, feel the craving coming on. It reminds me, as we were leaving Broken Bow, where my parents live in a very off in the middle of nowhere place, but part of that is near a city called Broken Bow. Well, there's a grocery store there, and we used to go to that grocery store. And across the street is a liquor store. And I used to go into that liquor store and buy a bunch of booze and hide it from my family. And as we were returning left at that light where it is, I saw the liquor store. Whew. It's like immediately my heart rate goes up. I start getting super warm. My ears are burning. My face is flush. I start to drink water. That doesn't cool me off. And I know it's because that liquor store is there. It has triggered me before. And it's like that visual anchor of all those memories come flooding back. And so I do my breathing exercise. 4 seconds in, hold for 2 seconds, 4 seconds out. And then I do that for usually about a series of between 5 and 7 times, and that can calm me down. But I expected that to come. I knew that it was at this light. I knew that it was going to be there. So whenever I feel it, and I'm talking about this whole internal surge, it's something I'm aware of, that it's possible. It doesn't happen every time, but it certainly happens frequently enough that I know it's coming. And if I set this anchor in my head to know it's coming, therefore to experience this surge, either way, because I've experienced it and already know how I work my way through it, I'm able to calm myself down relatively quickly and be able to just get back into my normal, hey, we're hanging out in the car and we're driving to Hot Springs where my car is broken down, but now it's fixed and life is amazing. But for those of you who is in different stages of sobriety and recovery, you may not be as prepared for those surges, for the craving voice, for the monster to get woken up and nudge you and say, hey, right there, come on, it's right there. So today I want to discuss four different conversations that I have had recently with either clients or listeners just like you of the show who've reached out to me. Now, if you're unaware that you can reach out to me, then let me be the next time I remind you that you can send me an email from sobrietytorecovery@gmail.com, or you can go to my website, jessemogul.com/ask me, and you can fill out a form to tell me a little bit more about yourself. From there, I can always send out an invitation for you to meet me over Zoom. Or there's also an opportunity on my actual website where you can set up a, like I call them a strategy calls, where we can just talk about your sobriety strategy and discuss what's going on in your life. Maybe from that, you decide to take neuro-linguistic programming, become one of my recovery coaching clients, invite me to come speak at wherever you might be working in the addiction recovery world or just your business in general, because I have a lot of presentations that are geared towards that. But either way, if you'd like to have a conversation with me, that could just be a chance for me to meet you. And then we both just say awesome things to each other for 30 minutes and then we smile and we go about our way. In many cases, that's how those conversations go. But now you know. So from sobrietyrecovery@gmail.com, jessemogul.com/ask me, or any of the links on my homepage, jessemogul.com, that say set up a call. There you go. There's three ways. And I know it can be a little nerve-wracking because I hear from those who do set these calls up that it can be a little bit nerve-wracking to send me that email and wonder if I'll respond. I may not respond in the first few days, but I will definitely get to it, unless it's like Facebook that for some weird reason likes to tuck off messages from people who don't follow me in this one area where I have to like accept it. It does it on Instagram too. I have to go to like three folders deep to find messages that I have to then accept in order to see. Well, I don't always remember to go to those places because I go on Facebook once every 2 months or I go on Instagram once every month. So by all means, if you want to directly reach me, I've just given you some means right there. From sobrietyrecovery@gmail is a great one. It is literally just an email address I created for this show. And when I had an opportunity to talk to my clients this week and talk to a couple listeners, it's really interesting the differences in all of them. One was in Chicago, another Sacramento, another one in Asheville, and another one in St. Augustine. And I would tend to just use the names of the cities these people come from because I didn't ask for permission to use their name. And even if I did just use their first name, it still felt a little off-putting. Even when my clients and people of the tribe gave me permission to do it like 100 episodes ago, it still felt a little weird. So now I'm just going to say their cities, and I've decided to do that months ago, and it seems to be working out fine. So Chicago, Sacramento, Asheville, St. Augustine. When I talked to Chicago recently, the big overarching message that came from this is prioritizing what you want most over what you want now. And this is a topic that we have discussed ad nauseum. Not just me in Chicago, because that was definitely the vibe of the entire conversation. And these calls can go a lot of different ways. Some can be coachy. Some of them can be strategy. This one was definitely inspirationally. Like, we were both really pumping each other up. I mean, it was a really gratifying phone call. And came from that with a lot of these different points that I'm getting ready to share with you now. That easy decisions make a hard life, but hard decisions make an easy life. That was one thing Chicago said that that's why I pulled out my phone. I was like, I gotta put that down. I had shared a story about a crab bucket. We had discussed donuts and pizza versus broccoli and fish. A lot of people getting caught up in the moment and never get what they really want from life. And sometimes you have to allow yourself to see things as a means to an end and not see what you're missing and see what these actions will lead you to. In closing, I think we had discussed, why am I really doing this? What does it mean to me? So let's cover some of these things. Whether you're a new sobriety or old school sobriety, any of these topics that Chicago and I discussed are going to be beneficial. Let's start off with prioritizing what you want most over what you want now. This is instant gratification. This is impulse control, right? Do you want something now? When we discuss donuts and pizza versus broccoli and fish, if one of your goals when you first get sober, like me, when I was 233 pounds and was like, what have I done to myself? Why? Felt like Kramer in Seinfeld when he started smoking cigars. And he's like, look away, Jerry, I'm hideous. Right? Like, I did not like who was looking back at me in the mirror. Not just when I crawled out of the shit tub, but once I got sober. And I was like, first few days in there, and I'm just looking at myself after a shower being like, dude, what have you done? Let's get this in order, right? When we prioritize what we want most in our lives over what we want now, that's when we see the donut and the pizza as a celebration opportunity, as a gift we give ourselves when we've worked toward a goal, and then that gets to be the celebration. That gets to be the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Because sugar and salt and sweets and yummy things, greasy foods, they're not necessarily healthy for us. I don't care how many studies paid for by people who literally produce sugar and salt and greasy foods. They'll go out there and they'll pay somebody to come up with, you know, 7 slices of pizza a day is actually good for your heart. 3 glasses of wine a week are perfectly fine for your baby. Like, they'll come up with any study they want to stand up towards their next marketing sales gimmick. But we know that broccoli and fish versus donuts and pizza are not the same thing. We know one is going to be healthy and one is going to be able to maintain a certain level of viability with our bodies long term. And the other one is delicious and awesome, but we certainly don't necessarily want to eat it every day. I think it was Sacramento who brought up, you know, do you just come home from work, sitting on your couch in your underwear, watching The Simpsons, eating bonbons? Because if that's what you were doing in your active addiction, probably not the most beneficial way to step into your early sobriety. So when Chicago and I are talking about easy decisions make a hard life and hard decisions make an easy life, it is that the easiest decision is just swing into a fast food restaurant on the way home. The harder decision, and I talk about this with one of my clients, Detroit, is driving past the fast food restaurant and being able to go home. And yes, it's going to be a little bit more time. It's going to be a little bit more effort to prepare yourself a deliciously yummy, healthy meal. But in the end, you get to walk away from that without feeling any guilt towards breaking a promise to yourself, without any kind of shame you might feel if you made a promise to somebody else that you were going to be healthy. I got someone down in Florida. Not St. Augustine, but I'm not really sure. I want to say Jupiter, Sunshine. Couldn't tell you the exact city, but we'll just call it, we'll just say mid-Florida. You know, they had made an agreement with their partner that they would stop using their drug of choice if basically the other person was like, well, you know what, I'll stop drinking, you stop using Kratom, which was, you know, a cool agreement that they made with one another. But as soon as the partner was like, you know what, I think I'm going to have a few beers, then the other person who made the promise not to use Kratom is like, but we had an agreement and now you're coming out of it. And now, well, then screw it. Why am I following the rules if you won't follow the rules? And this is where Sacramento and I started talking about how it has to be for you. When you choose to step into sobriety and recovery, it has to be for you. And Sacramento made a really good, you know, point, and whether this is something learned from me or just, you know, from her own memory, it was really just amazing conversation where it's all sort of a conglomerate, right? We just created this amazing moment between ourselves discussing sobriety and recovery, is that if you base it off of somebody else and say, I will do this for you, well, if they don't give you the feedback that you want, if they don't support you the way you really want to be supported in the moment, and you feel like, well, why am I even doing this for the person? They don't even care. They don't even seem, it doesn't even matter to them, right? It won't be too hard for your mind to justify going back to your DOC if that person isn't giving you the feedback you desire. But if you're doing this for you, then it's up to you to give yourself the feedback. That's the person you're seeking the feedback from, you. So we get caught up in the moment, right? And then we want to just say yes to that instant gratification, that lack of impulse control. But then you don't get what you really want in life. Yes, you'll say yes to the Kratom now, or the crack now, or the Johnny Walker Black now. You'll say yes to whatever is right in front of you, because what you really want is so much further away. But when we get wrapped up in, oh my goodness, this goal is 3 months away, this goal is 6 months away, we get lost in being present in the moment and realizing when we're grounded into the here and now, we realize that the here and now is all that we really can control. Yes, I had some speeches and presentations that I could be preparing for throughout these last 6 weeks when I've been super busy. But I also realized, like, what's coming up next? Okay, in the next 2 days, I've got a homework assignment due, I've got 2 client sessions, and I've also got a podcast. Okay, then those are the things on the immediate list. As I'm working on those things, which are the priority, because those are the things coming up the soonest, right? And they're all getting, there's always a hierarchy for me. What is the most immediate? What is the thing, if I get it done today, I will feel like this day is a win. That's my priority. Got somebody out in Los Angeles right now, still loving the P4F, which is a time creation strategy I teach to my clients, where you get 1 priority a day, 4 focuses, and those are the things that you're looking to accomplish. And so as you begin to work through these, and for me, it was saying, okay, well, this is the priority. This assignment's due at 5 p.m., then that's the priority. Get this assignment done. The podcast, that's a focus. The clients, they're also a focus. They're going to get done, but they're just going to get done at a different time. 5 p.m. assignment due, let's do it. And now that's close. It's easy to accomplish things easier. Let me preface that. Let me roll that back a little bit. It's easier to accomplish things that are right in front of you with a deadline. And like the TED Talk with the instant gratification monkey, I couldn't tell you the guy's name, but go to YouTube, type in TED Talk instant gratification monkey. And this guy talks about, it's my favorite one of all of them. I've watched it like 50 times. It's my favorite of all the TED Talks because what it basically comes down to in life is that it's easier to accomplish things when there's a deadline. Got to take the kids to school at 9, got to be at work at 9:30, got to get this assignment done for the teacher at noon, got to get this project completed for the boss by 3:30. Those are immediate things. Those are like house fires, right? It's like, here's another good metaphor. We can put out a fire in a forest, or we can do our best to help manage how much wood is just laying on the forest floor. So if a fire starts, it doesn't turn into a blaze that just destroys tons of homes. Forests actually do really well with fires. They would prefer that they could have fires more often. But humans build their houses around them, and therefore we don't want the forest to catch on fire. So we do our best to manage the fire. Well, one of the ways we do that is by pulling out dead wood, which is fine. And it doesn't mean that the forest still won't catch on fire. It just means that when it does, it doesn't turn into a 5-alarm blaze that just scorches the earth and just destroys whole towns. It's very much similar in your own way. You can do your best to prepare for the future, knowing that there's still going to be those times where there's an immediacy to your actions, where that fire is going to start. Like me and St. Augustine were talking about recently, you don't control whether you crave, you control whether you use. I couldn't control that liquor store sparking in me that physiological shift that made me feel hot, out of breath, and really just uncontrollably nervous. But there was definitely a warmth that I felt. I didn't ask my body to do that, nor did I tell it to do it. It just did it. It was my choice to figure out a way to heal through it in that moment. When we go to make decisions in our lives, there are some things that are immediate with deadlines right here and now. Make the meeting, call the sponsor, do step 2. There's ones that are further away. It's the losing 70 pounds. It's the getting ourselves out of $30,000 in debt. There's repairing relationships that have been, you know, torched by addiction. These are further out, but there's little steps each day that move us closer and closer to the actualization that we seek through sobriety and recovery in healing these things in our lives, in healing these areas that are so important to us. Our career, our self, our relationships, our physical body, our emotional intelligence and resiliency, our mental acumen and how well we're able to remember things, or our ability to sleep, or our spirituality and how many of our morals, ethics, values, opinions and beliefs, standards of habits, principles. Did I already say principles? I might have. I'm on a roll here, people. There's how many of those did we just decide to toss into the bonfire of our addiction, and now we want to clean those up. But when you get caught up in the moment, and you're thinking, you know what? What's the easiest way here? Eat the fast food. What's the easiest thing here? Scream and just storm out of the room. What's the easiest thing here? Hit snooze and just roll over and say, screw the world. I don't want to fuck with you today. And that might be what you used to do. And it can absolutely be something that you shift now. When you just continuously give in to the instant gratification and the impulses, then you don't really achieve what you desire in life. Sure, you might get pretty close, but is pretty close enough for you? Pretty close is where I lived all throughout my addiction. Yeah, I graduated from University of Florida with like a 2.3. I barely attended classes. I half-assed my way through most of them, doing all-nighters, crushing up Adderall and mixing it with cocaine, drinking bottles of Southern Comfort in order to get papers done, and wondered why the hell I got like a C on it. Hardly ever turned him into the alligator to get him published. You know, whenever it was time to put together a magazine, I took on editor rather than writer because I realized it'd just be a lot easier to sit at my computer and get drunk while I edited other people's work rather than actually trying to create my own work. When you let go of instant gratification and a lack of impulse control, then you are prioritizing what you want most over what you want now. There is a very interesting thing that came about with one of the clients. I mentioned him earlier, Asheville. Asheville went on this diatribe at the beginning of the session. My life is fucked. I'm never going to get better. Nothing will get better. I feel nothing. Feelings are worthless. Feelings are meaningless. If I feel, then I feel pain. If I don't feel, then I feel pain. Life has no meaning unless I'm high. I did everything right and it still feels like shit. I did everything right and I still got in trouble. I did everything right and nothing is fixed. I did everything for the high. I did everything to be high again. And now I don't get to have that anymore. So what purpose does life have? Now, I didn't write these down during the session because I was just creating a space for him to share that. But these were my recollections. And there was just a lot of repetition in this for the first 5 or 10 minutes. But it was an opportunity for him to just spew it out, get it out. Once it was out, we could start looking for shifts in thoughts, shifts in feelings, shifts in the actions and the behaviors that could be further propagating the negative thoughts and feelings. And maybe we can shift those into a more positive way to begin to experience life. If you think you're a piece of shit, I cannot just magically jump you across the gorge, Evel Knievel style, to making yourself think that you're the best person who's ever walked the planet and you've done nothing wrong. I mean, we've all done things wrong, but we certainly want to have a better personal self-image of ourselves when we look in the mirror. Yes, we may have gone to a wedding and made a complete ass of ourselves. I certainly have so many. Oh my goodness. My buddy who lives in Rochester, I blacked out at his wedding during the ceremony, before they even kissed the bride, before he even kissed the bride. And I came to on the dance floor, and I'll never forget dancing with someone, and they were like, there you are. And I was like, whoa, what just happened? They're like, you have been blacked out for like 2 hours. I was like, oh God, what have I done? She's like, you have definitely upset some people. And I was like, okie dokie, where's the bride? Let me apologize to her first. And it was just, fuck, man, I still have shame over that one. Right, but it's my thing that I did there was put myself in a situation that I knew I had already lived over time and time again, and then yet I relived it. And I still continue drinking for like another 6 years. So we have these moments in our lives that have caused us to see ourselves differently. When we step into sobriety and recovery, we don't just magically see ourselves different. We don't see ourselves as this changed person. Interesting, when Sacramento brought to the conversation, you know, I don't necessarily believe that I'm an alcoholic, but definitely a problem drinker. Is there any issue that I should discuss or anything around that that might not be beneficial? I'm using my words now to basically try to say, like, I call myself a problem drinker, not an alcoholic. Is that really an issue? And really, my question I posed back was, well, does you calling yourself a problem drinker change the fact that you want to be sober for the rest of your life? I mean, when she comes back with, no, I'm ready to be sober, you know, and I don't have to think about the rest of my life. I can just think about the next 24 or 48 hours, then great. That's your headspace. That's your mindset, right? A lot of people don't connect with AA because they just want everyone to introduce themselves as an alcoholic, and not everybody considers themselves an alcoholic. What's an alcoholic to you versus a problem drinker? You might have a visual image of an alcoholic being somebody who sleeps in a gutter, but a problem drinker could be Bree Vanderkamp from the old Desperate Housewives TV show, where she's cashing down on 3 bottles of white wine before lunch. But either way, the drinking and the drug using isn't helping the matters. Once you decide you're going to be sober, it's instilling the belief system that this is your new way of life. That no matter how many special celebrations there are, no matter how many family members, no matter how many social circles might try to shun you or chastise you for not drinking, that says more about them than it ever will about you. There's somebody currently at one of my jobs who comes to turn out doesn't like me. Like, he was training a new person the other day, and this person's like, yeah, he really hates you. He does not like you at all. Now, I have done nothing egregious to this person. I'm just Jesse. I'm bouncy. I'm happy. I share things about my life. I listen to other people about their lives. I sing random songs in the middle of the shift pretty loud. I'll just break into a song. But otherwise, nothing egregious to this person at all. I have not, you know, said bad things about them. I have not denigrated them. I have not stolen from them. I have not hurt them. I have not gone behind their back and said nasty things about them. I've done nothing egregious at all. So when I hear that this person doesn't like me, that's on them. It says more about them than it says about me. I didn't do anything quote unquote wrong. I have no idea. I even asked the person, like, is this something I did? It's like, no, there's no reason. He didn't say a reason. He just says he hates you, doesn't like you. Now, is that the words that this person used? Who knows? Because I'm hearing it from a third-party source. But they said enough things to this person to warrant this other person who just started the job, who just met me that day, to come let me know that. And yeah, there's a part of me that's very curious as to why this other person wouldn't like me so much. But it doesn't really matter what they say, because it says more about them than it ever will about me. People questioning why you're not drinking says more about them than it ever will about you. Let them get caught up in their moment. And this is something that Chicago and I talked about, the crab bucket. So maybe I could have brought this up at the beginning because this is a really cool metaphorical story, but this is something that I learned in teaching neuro-linguistic programming, and now I bring it up. So if you've ever dealt with a bunch of crabs in a bucket, then you'll understand this story. If not, let me paint it for you. When you put crabs in a bucket, that they will want to try to get out, because the crab doesn't want to be in the bucket. I'm not really sure I know of any creature that wants to be in a bucket. But not all of them have claws and arms where they could climb out. And the crab, one of them will invariably put a lot of effort towards getting out. And whenever they finally get their little claw up on the lip and they start to lift themselves up, other crabs will grab a hold of them and pull them back down into the bucket. This is a real thing. Go put some crabs in a bucket. Watch what happens. It happens with lobsters too, but you better have a really big bucket because lobsters tend to be longer than crabs. Not the point. The random shit that Jesse says that makes no sense for why he would bring it up in the moment. So anyways, let's get back to the crab story. So the crab wants to get out of the bucket. The other crabs see that the crab might potentially get out of the bucket. So the crabs grab the other crab, says, no, you get back in the bucket. If we're in the bucket, you're in the bucket. If we can't all get out of the bucket, nobody gets out of the bucket. If we can't all have candy, nobody gets to have candy. Remember when that would happen in elementary school? Did you bring enough for the whole class? Then you don't get to give any to your friend. Right? We get this idea that if everybody doesn't get some, then nobody gets some. Well, let's take this into our real life scenarios where the people that we love that are around us, that swear they want only the best for us, start to chastise us and give us a bunch of shit over the fact that we've decided to stop drinking. Now, Sacramento, as well as Asheville, and in many ways, lots of you, we have people in our lives who say they love us, they want the best for us, but drinking is a major part of their life. And when you step into sobriety and recovery, you are putting those people, without any intention, inadvertently, and often, it's not even vertently, it is their choice to see your decision to stop drinking has some mark on their own persona, their own personality, their own moral defects. That's on them for choosing that mentality. Instead of saying, wow, congratulations, I'm so happy that you've made that decision for yourself. I'm sure it was a brave one to make, and let me know how I can support you. Instead, it's just like, well, why'd you stop? You know what? You do have a problem. I'm so glad you stopped. I don't have a problem. I can drink as much as I want and wake up the next day just feeling fine. Let me be the first to remind everybody that waking up the next day feeling fine isn't the worst thing that's ever happened in addiction. Me saying, well, you know what? I don't get hangovers. I'm like, okay, are there any other parts of your life that are being completely screwed up because you're getting yourself binge-worthy, drunk, and wasted on alcohol and drugs on the daily? Anything else that might possibly be going wrong other than the fact that you don't wake up with a, or that you could wake up with a hangover or dehydration? Like, it's very interesting to me how many people will hang their hat on that, well, I don't get hangovers, so I'm good to go. Oh, how's your bank account doing? How's your relationships doing? How's your career growth doing? Your personal growth doing? How's your body weight going? How's your ability to be patient with the people that you love? How are all these things going? Because I can assure you that your alcohol and drug issues that could very well be an addiction or not, it's your choice, but either way, if this thing is actually fucking up your life, then there's an issue to be resolved. And if other people want to choose to see your decision to stop drinking as some mark of a fallibility on their own way of life, that's on them, not you. Because you wake up every single day, you look in the mirror at yourself, and you have to decide in those moments, are you happy with who's looking back? And if the answer is no, then you just go call up one of your friends and say, fuck it, I'm not happy with who I am right now. You want to get wasted? They're probably thinking, I woke up not happy with who I am. I totally want to get wasted. But now you just keep doing the same pattern of behavior, utilizing the same coping skills. I feel bad about myself. I get wasted. I wake up. I still feel like bad for myself. In fact, I probably feel even worse about myself. But screw it. For one more day, I got to put off the decision of actually figuring out a way to better my life. But when we step into sobriety and recovery, we say, frick that, man. Yes, feeling emotions can be tough. Asheville definitely said this. I don't know how to feel emotions. South Florida, mid-Florida, I brought it up a minute ago, right? She said, I don't know how to feel feelings. It's been so long. Augustine says this. Lots of us will say this. When I stepped into sobriety and recovery, I did not know what to do with the emotions. I understand that. I've got an old client, I haven't talked to him in a minute, but he lives in West Virginia, I want to say. He had that, did a lot of nefarious things, wasn't happy with his behaviors and actions back in the day, got sober and white knuckling it, and blessed be, he's made it to 2 years last I heard. But there is no willingness to forgive himself from the egregious behaviors he propagated on some of his loved ones. He's just going to keep whipping himself over that one. And that's a tough world to live in, where you refuse to step into the power of a program or steps or sponsorship or mentorship or recovery coaching or therapy or whatever it might be. Because living with your pain and sorrow and trying to do it all on your own and not just relinquishing some of the guilt and the shame that you feel, I mean, that is just like, it's like starting up a fire in the woods and then just walking away and thinking, yeah, fire will be fine. At some point, that fire is going to spread. And when it spreads, what else can it destroy? Destroying your sobriety and recovery, to me, is the one thing of all the things to covet, because that's what we build the foundation on. That's what is going to spread our message across the universe. That isn't just going to change everyone else's lives. First and foremost, it's going to change yours. When you get caught up in the moment and you don't do what you want to be doing for the long-term achievement, you are being at the mercy of your impulse control, of your childlike behaviors. And that's where a lot of these pains started. In our childhood, when we didn't know how to make a sense of the world, when we were being imprinted and implanted upon taking on other people's values that we didn't even know were values. Hell, we're 3 years old. We don't know what the fuck side eye is, but we definitely know when mom gives it to dad, some shit's about ready to hit the fan. So in the future, when we want a reaction of dad, boom, here comes some side eye. We don't even know why we're doing it, but we know we're going to get a reaction. When we sit here and allow ourselves to be caught up in what's happening in the moment and allowing ourselves to be that plastic bag like in the movie American Beauty that's just floating around in the wind, we're missing an opportunity to direct ourselves. Put your oars in the water and stop letting the river of shit wash you over the falls into a bigger, more powerful river of shit. You have the strength to paddle your way up the river. And that's what early sobriety and recovery can feel like. Because it won't just be your friends and family who won't understand why. It might be coworkers. It's society. Everything. Oh, I'm going to go to my kid's 4-year-old party. We're going to have a little clown that makes these little balloon shapes. And then we're going to have the baby shark song is going to play nonstop. And then we're going to drink. I used to love going to little kids' birthday parties because the parents who were really unhappy with their lives would inevitably be the ones who would want to be doing shots in the kitchen while all the other kids were outside and running around. And there would be so much nice booze at these places because there's like this feeling that as long as you're drinking expensive booze that you're not somehow like some poor alcoholic. It's a very interesting perspective that people who think that they have money will drink the more expensive stuff to somehow not feel like the person who shouldn't be drinking at 10 a.m. I worked at a fancy hotel once, and this extremely rich person, used to tip with hundreds, once said to me, the only people who care about what time of the day it is when they start drinking is the middle class, because all they want is to be rich, and they definitely are afraid of being poor. But you talk to somebody who's downtrodden and poor, fuck it, let's drink, it's 9 a.m. You talk to somebody who's rich, got all the money, don't even have to flex on anything that they want in life, go to the country club for breakfast, fuck yeah, I want a mimosa, but I don't give a shit if it's 8 a.m., right? It's that fear of not achieving something that pushes us so often in our lives to behave a certain way. But now we step into sobriety and recovery, and in order for us to understand our values, to understand our intentions and our principles and why we say the things that we say and do the things that we do and think the way that we think, these things have to get pulled out of us and laid across a barren table for us to decide once we evaluate, we disseminate, we begin to really investigate, get into frickin' discovery mode. Why do I have this feeling about myself? Why do I value this one thing? Why is freedom or love or connection or certainty or stability or being intoxicated? Why are these things so important to me? What has they been fueled by? What are they rooted into? The crabs might want to pull you back in the bucket because they don't want this level of enlightenment or awareness, and that's on them, man. Be in the bucket if that's where you want to be. But I don't care how many people try to pull me back down in the bucket. That's just going to make me stronger so the next time I can pull myself out of their grip using my grip to get me over that fucking bucket's edge. There will be those who do not want to support you. Not because of anything that you've done, but because of everything that they see themselves not doing. And when we have these conversations with my clients or with the listeners, or when you have these conversations at your meetings, with your sponsor, with your therapist, be aware that a lot of social influences can drive your early stages of confidence, self-assuredness, and just the desire to want to continue on your sobriety path. If you come home and the person that says they love you the most is still going to drink in front of you, even though they know you're trying not to drink, you're going to have to question their intentions around that behavior. I'm not saying divorce everybody as soon as you decide to get sober, but certainly if there cannot be a communicative opportunity here where we say, hey, look, this is something that's important to me. Can we figure out a way to work together on this? I don't want you to have to change your life for me because you don't have the problem. It's me with the issue I want to resolve, but I would like to figure out a way to feel supportive in this house. And it might be 17 different lapses and relapses that you're into and you're having this conversation like, yeah, you know, every single time you say you want to be sober and then 21 days later, you're right back into it. So why should I change my life now just for you to come back into the fold in 21 days? I don't know if that's them trying to sabotage you or not. I don't know if that's the bucket incident or not. That's for you to have to decide with them and through conversation. It's like, okay, well, then maybe after dinner, when you want to have a few, I'm just going to go into the other room and I'll watch a little show. Or I'm just going to go stay at the kitchen table and I'm going to read this book or listen to Jesse's podcast. Or I'm going to, you know, do some step work. Or I'm going to go to a meeting. Like, figure out a way to shift your environment and figure out where can you get into alignment with the people you love the most to have them be able to support you, to feel like you're not necessarily demanding support from them, because everyone's going to support you the way that they know how to support you. And sadly, it definitely has an opportunity sometimes, usually, frequently, I'm using all of the different time-based words here, it can turn out to not be the way you would like to be supported. That's where doing this for yourself, like Sacramento said, you do it for yourself. So if somebody wants to sit there and have a few, that doesn't bother you because they're doing them and you're doing you. Because you know in the heart of hearts, in the depths of your soul, that the reason you are doing this is because that behavior is no longer freaking serving you. And it might be serving them to whatever extent that it is or isn't for you to decide. You are on your path. You do your path. If somebody else decides around you to go back to school to get a degree, to have a better job, to make more money, and you don't want to do any of that shit, and you just want to stay in the job that you've always stayed in because you like it, it doesn't mean you're a freaking loser because they're doing their thing. It just means that they're doing their thing. You are doing your thing. My brother has started running marathons. That's awesome for him. He's 10 years younger, with much better knees than me. And at his age, I was running half marathons every month. That's great. I don't feel any level of jealousy around this. There's a part of me that's like, should I be working harder? Should I be running? Should I be doing more with my physical body? And I'm like, you know what? I'm good. You go, brother, go. I'll come celebrate you. I'll come clap for you. Just because you're doing it, I want to do it. Maybe when I get this knee surgery, I'll be down to do a sprint triathlon with them just to do something together. But running for 4.5 hours? Oh, no, no, no. And I don't feel like he's trying to make me feel bad about myself because he wants to go off and do something for himself. I wasn't even there when he decided to start doing this stuff. How often do we get upset about somebody else trying to better their lives when we weren't even around for the decision? We're not even there regularly enough to see what not having committed to this decision is doing to their lives in private. So often, frequently, we want to do things for ourselves to better our own lives, and then we start taking other people's perceived perceptions of that behavior into account. No, no, you do you. Crabs in the bucket be damned. A lot of other people can get caught up in the moment. And they may never get what they want. And they might have jealousy, anger, this egregious vacillation towards even liking you, whatever that might be. But that's on them. It says something about them. It doesn't say anything about you. We're going to close on this. Sometimes you have to allow yourself to see things as a means to an end and not see what you're missing, but instead see what these actions will lead you to. Chicago and I discussed this as well, right? What is it you're really doing? And what does it mean to you? Find your curiosities. Find your interests. Get involved in a new hobby. Get involved in a new activity. I talked to my mentor today, and for the longest time, I think the last year or two, he's been fixing Ataris and old Nintendos. We're like talking like 1984, 87 shit here. And he really got into it. Started up an eBay store, was doing that whole thing. And he's like, you know what? I'm picking up my last Atari. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to sell it. Then I'm going to shut down my eBay store. He's like, it was cool. I enjoyed it. Maybe in the future I'll get back into it. But, you know, I feel like I've come to the end of that path for me. That's, he was curious about, could he fix an old school electronics? Got himself a hold of an old Atari, bought himself one of those little, like, I don't know, like little welding thingies. What do they, like, where you melt pieces of metal together? You know, not like a welding torch, but something simpler. And I'm sure there's about 1,000 of you right now yelling the word at me. But the point being is he wanted to figure out how to put circuit boards and all that shit together. And so he went out there and he started to do it. And he got really good at it. And he started selling them, and people really started liking them, and they started following him on the eBays and buying all this stuff. And he built this little community of people who were into fixing old Ataris and Nintendos. And here we are, year or two into it. And he's like, Jess, I just don't think it's not what it was for me back in the past. I've enjoyed it. Now it's time to move on. He took a curiosity. He turned it into an interest. He made it into a major hobby in his life, but it didn't turn into a passion. And not everything you do will. Release this idea or this desire that everything you step into has to become your next ultimate most favorite thing, never going to let it go kind of intentionality, hobby-based activity in your life. I enjoy juggling. I enjoy jump roping. I enjoy the ukulele. I enjoy the xylophone and my harmonica. I enjoy a lot of things, but I just, sometimes they sit here gathering dust for weeks on end. And then sometimes I pick them up and I don't even try to care to learn the notes. I just want to sit here and strum the ukulele for 30 minutes. Other times you might want to start up an ukulele band, but it's okay to take on something, get really excited about it, and then let it go after a year or two. Sometimes as children, our parents would buy us expensive things to help support our next hobby. And then when we wanted to quit it in 6 months, they got angry that they just spent $100 on a new tennis racket or $200 on a set of clubs or $30 on the best catcher's mitt possible. What they fail to realize is that kids are going to get into some stuff and they may not stick, and that's okay. Buy everything from a secondhand store first and see if the kid will actually get into it. In fact, I know somebody who's, that's a rule. They're like, I never buy myself anything brand new until I've been doing it and utilizing it for at least a year in my life. I think one of my old clients in San Diego, like, yeah, I wouldn't even think about buying something brand new until I'd been doing it for a year. And then I'm like, okay, now you can go off and get the nice new thing, because I didn't want a house full of shit that was just a passing fancy. It's okay to take on things. It's also okay to release things. Make sure you're not doing it because it got hard or difficult or you got confused or overwhelmed or frustrated, where a simple YouTube video or a little bit of patience in yourself as you learn something new would have helped you overcome that barrier, that obstacle, that hurdle. Make sure that you're releasing this thing back into the wild for the right intentions. And for my mentor, man, I put together this whole thing, turned it into a business and a store. But you know what? I've been doing it now for a year or two, and it's just, yeah, I think I'm good here now. I want to go off and do stand-up comedy. I want to go over here and teach people how to do this one thing. I'd love to pick up pickleball. All right, man, go rock and chalk and jayhawking it and doing all that fun. Boomer Sooner, Orange Blue, go be you. Get curious and interested in things. Pick them up and be okay if they don't all turn into passions and purposes. I always had a desire to learn things and explain them to other people in a way where everybody, no matter their intelligence level, their experience level, their interest level, could easily take what I said and put it into action. I've loved helping people, from tourists with the upside down map on the street trying to figure out where the Hollywood sign is, to somebody wanting to, know how to do basic math in their head, or somebody wanting to understand how the human brain works and the psychology of addiction is. There's a fire inside of me to learn things and then explain them to other people so that they can know it too. And also, hopefully, in a way that allows it to be quickly integrated where they might even be able to go teach somebody else it. Because I definitely don't want to give people fish. I don't just want to teach you to fish. I want to explain something so well to you that you can go teach it to other people and not even realize that you learned it that well from me. That was always a passion in my life. Learn, learn, learn. Experience, experience, experience. Turn this inward. Better myself. And whenever my cup runneth over and inside of me became so full, it exploded outwards. And there came a podcast, and there came the books and the coaching and the speaking and all of that other stuff. Somewhere out there is your passion and purpose. And it's waiting for you behind the steps of curiosity and interest. Don't get caught up in the moment, never actualizing what you really want in life. Yes, Asheville can sit there and say that his life is fucked and he's never going to feel and love and anything, and he's in different stages. And I really think that I meant to say this episode was going to be at the stages of addiction, and it sort of turned into this whole inspirational thing instead. But I think in here we're hearing stages. We're all in varying degrees of these kind of aspects in our sobriety and recovery. You might be at the beginning stage where you think you're a piece of shit and you'll never feel anything again and you don't deserve love. You might be in a stage where you're finally ready to commit, but yet you vacillate, and every 3 to 7 or 14 days, you go back to your DOC for a day or two, and then you're back into sobriety and recovery. And that pattern might continue for a year or two. It certainly did for me. Blackout for 10 days, come out, don't drink for 5 weeks. Blackout for 10 days, come out, don't drink for 3 weeks. Like, it was all part of the pre-contemplation and the planning. It's okay to be in that stage. It's okay to be in the stage where you think you don't want anyone around to support you, but then you really do want somebody around to support you. And it's okay to again, teeter-totter on that decision, to feel one way one day, and one day, the next day, you feel completely different, because we're humans. And part of the experience is that we feel, and feelings that grow upon thoughts, and thoughts and feelings combine to make actions. And one day, I hate sunshine, and the next day, I loathe rain, and then I want to all happening in the same time. And it's okay. It's okay, because we're humans. Just don't let somebody pull you back down into the bucket. Maybe you're in that stage where people aren't ready to accept who you are. Maybe you're at that stage where you're not ready to accept who you are. But you have to decide right now, am I going to prioritize what I want most over what I want now? Maybe you're a year in and life isn't living up to the promise that sobriety and recovery, that when I say every day is the best day of my life whenever I wake up sober, and every day is the best day of your life when you wake up sober, you don't feel that. Okay, then that's your stage. You've made it to a year, but there's still so much more locked inside you. Let's get it out. It's like, are you ready to rumble? Easy decisions make a hard life. Hard decisions make an easy life. Hear it again. Easy decisions make a hard life. I'm going to drink the booze. I'm going to yell at somebody. I'm going to do the drug. I'm going to stop at the fast food place. You know, I'm going to skip paying the bill in favor of going on the vacation. That's going to make your life harder. When you make the hard decisions, I'm going to pay these bills on time and not have a ton of extra income. I'm going to say no to the alcohol and drugs, even though that's going to ostracize me from this tribe I've been in for so long. Whenever I, instead of storming out of the room after screaming fuck you to my spouse's face, I'm going to turn around and say, I have no idea how to handle this situation right now, and I feel extremely emotionally vulnerable, but by God, I don't want to keep going down the same fucking path of pain. Hard decisions make an easy life. Eat the donut and the pizza sitting on your couch, fucking watching The Simpsons, watching somebody else's dreams come true on the telly, or get your fucking ass up off the couch and go out there and do the hard things in life, because I promise you, on the other side of that is everything you've ever thought you could become. We get caught up in the moment. We never really get what we want. And it's easy to get into those kind of behaviors because we see so many other people doing it. Well, that person just says, fuck it, give up. Let's sit on the couch watching The Simpsons. Why don't I just do that? Hell, it worked for my mom. It worked for my dad. It worked for my aunt. It worked for my ex-girlfriend, ex-boyfriend. It worked for the cat down the street named Barbara. Like, if everybody else is doing it, so why should I be the one to push myself? Because somewhere on that telly, you are seeing people live up to the highest sense of self. They're achieving their dreams. And you know what? You know what's on the other side of achieving your dreams? Disappointment. Loss, failure, also called feedback situations. You ever seen somebody achieve the highest of highs, how quickly society wants to tear them apart? Tom Brady holding a Super Bowl trophy today becomes the guy who throws his last pass at the Foxborough Stadium as an interception. How many people want to love on Peyton Manning? And yeah, he got to ride out in the sunset as a Super Bowl champion, but do you know how many losses, how many interceptions, how many times he was made fun of for how weak his throws were? Yeah, you see it happen in athletes, but let's not look too far away from our celebrities either, right? The Jennifer Anistons, the Angelina Jolies, the Reese Witherspoons of the world, everybody touts them for being these strong, amazing women, but as soon as they sneeze the wrong way or come out of the house with their makeup done slightly off, all of a sudden it's like they're aging, they're getting old, they're over the hill, they should just stay home, nobody wants to see their hideous face, why are they making us live through this painful vision? Robert Downey Jr. has to fall his ass all the way into the depths of addiction, like end up in a police report, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, we love you as Iron Man, we knew you could come out. Bullshit, they were trying to tear him down while he was going through those worst days of his life. And these are celebrities, these are people that we want to build monuments and statues to, even if metaphorically, and we're willing to tear them down. What do you think people are actually going to do when you're in a community and they see you seeking to achieve your highest of highs, and they're not willing to push themselves that way? On the other side of accomplishment is just starting over again. Oh my goodness, somebody created that loop. It was Mobile. Mobile created that loop. We got into this thing where, you know, we started, it was in a coaching session, and we got to this part where they were like, yeah, you know, I just feel miserable every day. And I was like, okay, well, what's the step up from being miserable? And they were like, all right. Okay, well, then what's the next step? Well, you know, I can deal with it. I'm content. Well, what's the next step? I like it. It's nice. Well, what's the next step? I love it. This is where I want to be. Wow, that's awesome. Well, what's the step after that? Is it more? Can I do more? Can I be more? I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to hear out of you. What can you be? What is the next step after that? How can I get this? How can I attain this more that I seek after loving where I am and moving up from, it's nice, I'm content, it's all right. I'm miserable. Now here I am, and I love it, and I want more. And then I ask myself, how can I get this? And I'm like, wow, that is great. What is the next step? And I knew it was coming. I didn't know how many times I had asked this question, but I knew it was coming. I knew, because this is how the human mind does. It loops us back to the beginning. So when I asked her, you go from miserable to all right, to I'm content, to I like it, to I love it, I want more of it. How can I get this? What is the next step after that? And the answer I had been waiting for, I just didn't know when it was going to come, came out of Mobile's mouth, and she goes, sadly, it starts back at miserable. Because that's what we do to ourselves. We feel like shit, so we try to get ourselves out of the shit. Then we get ourselves to all right, and we're like, okay, I can do this. All right, right? And the next day, it's like, okay, I'm content. Like, it ain't good, it ain't bad, but man, it's a little bit better than it was yesterday. Hells yeah, what? Now I like it? This is nice? All right, this is some good stuff right here. Now I love it? Oh boy, I want more of it? How can I get this? What? We're back at the beginning. Because that's what we were feeling miserable about to begin with. How can I get this? How can I be more? And that fostered the miserable. So now you're back up. And what does this tell us is that when you achieve something, the inclination is for the human mind to want to achieve more, to want to do it again. One Super Bowl ring's not enough. Now I want two. Tom Brady once asked, what's your favorite ring? He goes, the next one. Now, at the time, I used to think that maybe his answer should have been my wedding ring. But anyways, he said the next one. Seven Super Bowl rings in, and his answer was the next one. Because when we achieve, hedonistic adaptation kicks in, and we want more, 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 more. It's that glutton inside of us. I achieved this one thing. I want more. We will think, well, if I just had $100,000, I'd be happy. Ask how many people have $100,000 if they're happy. You good? You don't want to make any more money? Oh, hell no. Now I want to double it, triple it, quadruple it. I want to make so much goddamn money I can start fires with it. Can I have $1 million? Here you go. Here's $1 million. How content are you right now? Are you kidding me? Can I double it, triple it, quadruple it? I want to set it on fire. Just to light up a cigar. How can I make more money? Here's $10 million. You happy now? Oh, boy. I want to double it. I want to triple it. I want to quadruple it. I want to start a big bundle of fire on money, and I just want to do it. Why? You want to start a fire to stay warm? Nah, fuck it. I just want to watch my money burn. I want to make more money. Here's $100 million. You happy now? Hell no. We get it. We want more. We can reel it in. We can think about how that's actually causing our lives to feel miserable. We can still be ambitiously discontent for what we're desiring from ourselves, but we can be content in the moment. We can ask ourselves, is this something that I am ready to really put my effort into? Because a lot of people say that they want to be rich, that they want to be famous, that they want to have $1 million. They want to be somebody who I want to start a startup. I want to start a startup that makes an app that changes the world. But are they really willing to put in that 100 hours of coding, right? I want to be a world-class bodybuilder. Are they really willing to put in all that training and focus on their nutrition in order to achieve that? Most people want something, but they're not really willing to put in the effort for that thing. And that's fine too. Just don't beat yourself up when you make this insanely, castle in the sky kind of promise to yourself and then fall a little short. Because I'd rather, shoot for the sun and hit the moon than just aim for the house next door and barely get off my couch. Like, screw that, man. Dream. Dream as far as you want to dream. Dream until you can't even scream it any louder, that you're just, your voice is gone with how much you have just yelled it out to the world. Make it be true for you. Dream. Write it down. Whatever it is. Whatever it is. If you find yourself being like, no, that's ridiculous, I should reel it in a little bit. Nope, write it down and then double it. Just to do it. We can figure out the reality of it later. There's an old Walt Disney trick from back in the day when he used to brainstorm. There would be the dreamer, the realist, and the cynic. The dreamer would be like, we're going to build a floating vehicle that's going to carry everybody around the world. The realist would be like, okay, first of all, we have not figured out quite yet how to build a hoverboard, let alone a flying car. So that's an issue. And so the technology doesn't exist yet. And if it did, it would probably cost us $1 billion to make that. I don't think we could turn that into a ride. And then the cynics over here being like, that's stupid. Ain't nobody wanting to do that anyways. Who the hell wants to get on a flying car? Everybody likes to ride horses, right? Right? Don't let the realist and the cynic destroy your dreams. Get it out there. because somewhere in there is the reality of what you actually can achieve. But if you think all you can do is just walk down the driveway and that's all you've got in you, instead of dreaming that one day you could, you know, run all the way to City Hall, then all you're going to do is just try to get to the end of the driveway. And yes, we've talked about this before. Get to the end of the driveway, then push yourself to the next driveway and the next driveway and the next driveway. But allow yourself to dream that one day you'll sprint to City Hall. Allow yourself to dream the greatest life that sobriety and recovery can create for you. Allow yourself to turn these dreams into visualizations and illuminations and attach sounds and feelings and painful attributes that you're ready to overcome from your past. Attach all of this to this. Make this in your mind. Paint such a vivid picture, attaching whatever sounds help, you know, illuminate it and gravitate you towards this. Create it in your mind and then go and start figuring out ways to achieve it. Do you need to get a sponsor, a mentor, a recovery coach? Listen to a book, listen to a podcast, read a book. Do you need to go and learn from somebody else? Go back to school. What is it you think you need to do? Then reverse engineer that and start taking action steps toward it. No one is going to drag your ass up off that couch day in and day out and make you achieve something. At some point, they're going to get tired of trying to drag a horse to the water. Get yourself going. You are capable. You are worthy. And whether it's talking to Chicago about prioritizing what you want, whether it's talking to Sacramento about not allowing other people in her life to dictate her behaviors, whether it's talking to Asheville about why he thinks he's a piece of shit and why he doesn't want to feel his feelings, why it's talking to Mid-Florida about how hard it is to be able to speak your truth and be vulnerable and get the support from your loved ones that you desire, whether it's talking to Augustine about, you know, is the craving voice really there and is it something that I can even control? And since I can't control craving, I at least can control the using and being okay. If even in that just hint of control, that is where the power lives. If it's talking to Detroit about how to take in all these different methods and turn them into a holistic program. If it's about West Virginia, who's willing to white knuckle it because they don't think that they're worthy of forgiveness, or I've got 50 more states, that's 50 more clients I could talk about. Every single one of them is going through their own trials and tribulations. They're following their own path. There are countless people I have met and experienced in this world that I know have achieved it, and they are willing to share their information with you. You just need to reach out and let them know that you are interested, that you are curious. You could start by reaching out to me and saying, what's up? From sobrietyrecovery at gmail.com, jessemogul.com/askme. Go on any of my links, set up a time. If there's something that I have said here today that is ready to spark you to make massive change in your life, I say a lot of things on these shows. I've got 1,000 more, if not more, of these things in me. And some of them are, hey, step by step, this is how to do it. And other ones are just inspirational. And I have no idea. If you were to go back and ask me what the hell I've been talking about, I got like 6 sentences written down in front of me. It isn't a whole lot. I don't know where half this shit came from, but I know it needed to be said, and I'm glad you heard it. If you want me to meet you and see if I can be a part of your team, if you would like to join the tribe, if you'd like to come on as a recovery client, whatever it is that you're seeking, perhaps there's a way I can help get you there. But either way, I can inspire you, but it's up to you to motivate yourself. It's up to you to turn off the Simpsons, put on some freaking shorts, and go outside, getting the frick up off the couch, not eating the bonbons, and deciding to take action in your life. Yes, you're going to want to be flexible and tenacious, but it's going to start with a growth mindset, and that's going to allow you to be courageous, leading you to decisiveness, and now you're taking action, and then from action and consistently doing that action, then comes the discipline, and from there becomes the life that you've always wanted. And yes, at some point, you're going to attain it, even if it's not exact. It's going to be pretty fucking close. And you know what? On the other side of that is going to be the desire to achieve even more. And whether you choose to have that feel miserable or whether you choose to have that feel invigorating, whatever it is, it's your choice to feel what you feel. And I'm not going to discount any of your feelings. They're valid to you. As long as they don't hold you back from taking the next step, then my friend, you're on your way to your best life ever. But only you can decide for you who you're doing this for. Make the right choice. Inclusivity over exclusivity, the power of positive energy, release and flow. Everybody, I love you. Thank you for enjoying that inspirational diatribe. Every day is the best day of our lives when we wake up sober. Shout out to Sunshine. Shout out to Robert. What up, Mama and Abby? Glow on, my friends. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.